Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Senziano, it's a beautiful day, Friday afternoon. Ready to do some work this weekend. We're closing another deal, right? It's been great. It's been an amazing week for
us.
It's been an amazing week.
And it's late night for us right now, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you give us some of that late night FM DJ voice, huh?
It's never too late, my friend, to impart the knowledge, right?
Never too late, baby. Hey, before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, CrowdStreet, who knows you don't have to know a guy to find a quality commercial real estate investment opportunity. Learn more at crowdstreet.com/wheelbarrow, and for visiting their site, they're going to give you a free gift. Today's guest is Cameron Harold. Cameron is known around the world as the CEO Whisperer, and he's the founder of the COO Alliance. He is a mastermind behind hundreds of companies' exponential growth and is a top-rated international speaker that has been paid to speak in 26 different countries. So without further ado, Cameron, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jake. Hey, Gino. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Cameron.
Our pleasure. Tell us about how you got started in business and how you grew your company.
Sure. I was actually really groomed as an entrepreneur. My dad raised my brother and sister and I all to be very entrepreneurial and to look for opportunities to make our own money, be in control of our own future, and really be in control of our own time. So just from a very, very young age, I've been doing lots of entrepreneurial ventures. In fact, I did a TEDx talk that's been on the main TED website for about 8 years now on raising kids as entrepreneurs. So
that's kind of what's going to love this one, right?
Yeah. And then I really got my first formal business training at a company called College Pro Painters. And College Pro is the largest residential house painting company on the planet. I was in the top 60 people in that company globally, and every year we had to hire 800 franchisees who would go out and hire 8,000 painters. And then between May 1st and August 31st, we produced 64 million in painting, and then 8,800 people would quit and go back to school, and we would do it again.
I got to jump in real quick. So yeah. There's just going to be a lot here, and I'm sorry. Number one, Gino's got six kids and is always preaching financial education, teaching the kids, you know, financial mindset. So we're going to have to dive into that in a minute. In addition to that, my best friend, the guy who was the best man in my wedding, actually sophomore year, joined College Pro. And I'm actually very upset with you because if you signed him up, it actually took away from drinking time that we had sophomore year. So he went that way, and then eventually he became an architect. But anyways, carry on. Please tell us more about how you got started.
Where was your franchisee?
Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Anyways. Did he do well?
Yeah, he seemed to. You know, any money to a college kid is a lot, I guess so.
I did really well. I actually bought my first house the year that I graduated from college with my own money, and then traveled around the world with my own money 2 years after that. I paid all my own university for 4 years as well. The College Pro was a really amazing learning ground on how to actually build and scale a company. And then on the leadership team side was how to actually run them and coach them. So I was coaching entrepreneurs when I was 25 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of did that for 7 years. Then I left and I was a partner in a chain of collision repair shops. We built that up, scaled it. I left right as we were taking the company public. In the U.S., it's known as Gerber Auto Collision, and in Canada, it's Boyd Auto Body. It's the largest collision repair chain in the world now. And then I left there, and I was president of a private currency company. So kind of similar to what Bitcoin is doing today, but that was 17 years ago. And we built the company up for $64 million to a U.S. public company. And then I left there and I joined as this chief operating officer for a small company that was called the Rubbish Boys. And we turned it to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And I took them from 14 employees to 3,100 employees in 6.5 years. Left there 10 years ago. And since then, I've been coaching and mentoring real businesses all over the world. I've written 4 books. I've been doing speaking events in 26 countries on 5 continents. And I've started the CEO Alliance and I've got 4 kids. So I've been
a business. So then let me ask you a question. Where'd you go to college and what'd you study in school?
I went to college in Ottawa, Canada, and you could pretty much disregard the fact that I went to school. It's funny, I was actually pulling this out the other day to show one of my kids. My university transcript is, see the grades?
Yeah.
D's and withdrawns and failures.
That's awesome.
I kid you not, I was one of the stupid kids. I was told I was stupid. I was told I wouldn't succeed. I was told to pay attention. So I was really frustrated in school. And in fact, I have a very heavy bias against traditional education. I think you learn more by being out there and by doing it and working with successful people and successful entrepreneurs than putting a whole bunch of money into debt and coming out with theory. So I learned more at College Pro Painters. In fact, Elon Musk's brother, Kimball Musk, worked for me as a franchisee. I hired him out of school. And then I also hired and trained his cousin, Peter Reeve, who built Solar City.
Wow. So, I mean, there's a lot to unravel there because there's so much, I guess, energy around that. Robert Kiyosaki's book is Why Do the C Students, you know, Employ the A? Why Do the A Students Work for the C Students? So basically, you're one of those. Yeah, exactly. Yes. I mean, it's that's what it's all about. That College Pro Painter was your first one. I mean, that left an indelible print on it. But which business do you feel most successful or most, I guess, passionate about that you founded out of all those?
Well, College Pro is where I learned how to run companies. You know, I learned about the power of systems and systemizing everything. I learned about building a business slightly more than a business and slightly less than a religion. So it would be in that zone of a cult, like culture.
I love it.
I learned about, you know, leading people and the automation of kind of having more people making me a little bit of money. And I had 12 full-time employees when I was 21 years old. So that was a really powerful experience. I think the one I'm more proud of and maybe building would be 1-800-GOT-JUNK, just because we ended up in 330 cities and 46 states and 4 countries. We were on Oprah, you know, landed 5,000 stories about our company in the media. So it was a bigger brand. And I was the second in command. But I don't know. And I don't really take any of this so seriously. At the end of the day, we're all going to die. Like, this is, we're all just walking each other home.
So then what keeps you going then? I mean, if you have that outlook on it, what gets you up in the morning ready to go?
I like doing it. I love helping entrepreneurs make their dreams happen. I like giving them the shortcuts. I like giving them the cheat sheets. I think everyone's working so hard when they don't have to that it's like they fly trying to get out the window. They keep banging their head against the wall. And if they would turn, there's a door open right here. Just, you know, why are they trying to get out the window? Just go that way.
Because that's all they know. That's unfortunately, that's all they know, right?
So I like helping them because I was the kid who, when I had the cheat sheet, I could pass the test. And then I realized that it wasn't actually about memorizing all the information anyway, because nowadays it's all on Google. So I'm trying to just help them. And I like doing it. I've said for years, I would do what I do for free, except my kids have to eat.
That's great. What do you see? I mean, it seems like business all falls in a box. It's income over expenses. But when you look at a company, what are the telltale signs you see that are struggling? And the second question is, what do you implement or what's your framework?
Yeah, a lot of businesses aren't focused. They're just working hard. So they're not working on the most critical few things. They're just very busy being busy. You know, they wake up in the morning and they're checking email right away. I wake up in the morning and I set my top 3 goals with another business associate, my accountability partner. I have a daily accountability partner for business and for personal, and I use a free app called Commit to 3. So I do that every single day. I wake up and I have my vivid vision. That's a 4-page document describing my company 3 years in the future, and I work towards making every sentence of that document. I've literally taken what I see my company looking like, and I share it with anyone who wants a copy of it, my speaking events, people on the internet. I share my future with them so they can help me make it come true. And again, I think most businesses are just working hard instead of focused. And then most people don't hire great employees. They work and they hire a bunch of B's and C's and they try to hold them accountable instead of hiring a bunch of A's and just pointing them in the right direction. A's will make it happen.
So what do you see that a lot of businesses have in common? Because it seems like you've been in 1-800-GOT-JUNK, you've been in commodities. I mean, is there a common thread through all of them, or is it just the employees and the systems that you employ?
You know, there's a lot of commonalities. You know, I've probably coached 20 companies that rank in the top 5 in their country to work for. So they actually understood the power of culture, the power of really creating that cult-like experience and having everyone completely aligned. I've seen the power of systems and really systemizing everything as if you were going to franchise it. You know, business is truly extraordinarily simple, but we overcomplicate it. Just have a good product or a good service. Don't overpromise to your customers. Hire really smart people and put them in the roles and give them the support so they can do their job and get out of their way.
That's one of the biggest complaints we have, Jake, right? Is hiring those A AA plus people. I mean, what kind of advice would you give to somebody looking to hire people that are really, really excellent?
Yeah, most businesses have never had any training on how to hire and interview and recruit people. So they say it's hard to find people, but they actually don't know how to do it. They've never had a stitch of training. So some of the basics are, first off, decide what the cultural behavioral traits are you want that employee in those roles to have. So for every role, what are the core five behavioral traits they need to exhibit? And then secondly, what are the five big things, the outputs they need to get done in their job? And if they get those five things done, you'd be thrilled at your decision to hire them. So now you want to interview people and find out if they've done it before and the depth of their experience at having done each of those things before, and hire people that culturally fit who have done it. Most people hire for attitude and train for skill, and you end up with slow growth.
Jake, before I jump into the book Miracle Morning, that's why I want to get Cameron on especially. You have any other business questions for him?
Man, you know, it's I was actually, for the first time in my life, actually present and absorbing what he was saying. I wasn't thinking about the next thing I was going to say. So, you know, one thing that I will just comment on is you just punched me in the gut, because my whole thing is, look, we've struggled hiring people at times, right? So I'm always out there looking for attitude and ethics and then trying to train the rest. And a lot of the things that I look for is, you know, you talked about, have you done it before? So it's do you have some kind of sales experience? That's big for what we do. Have you worked with, you know, managing or any type of maintenance guys? What is your organizational skills? What are your organizational skills? So it's funny how there's some characteristics in what we're doing, but there's obviously we have some room to improve and growth as well, Gino.
You're getting smacked down right now, Jake.
I'll give you a really, really good example of this that illustrates the point so clearly. Would you want to hire someone who knows how to paint a house because they read about it in a book? Or would you rather hire a painter who's painted 100 houses to paint your house? Clearly, you're going to hire the guy who's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
But you would never bring anyone in to paint your house who's just read it in a book, or who has no references. Well, why would we bring them in to do marketing for us, or to do sales for us, or do finance for us?
I guess I will push back a little on that, because some of my best employees, I actually, one of them, we actually met at Ruth Chris, right? Phenomenal. She's one of the best employees we got. And I just said, wow, this lady has it, right? We interviewed her.
What role did you put her in?
Say again?
What role did you put her into?
I put her right in as a manager. And then she has excelled, and you know, to this day has been our top performer.
Okay, so did she manage people at Ruth Chris?
No.
She managed customers, multiple tables. She managed lots of multiple projects inside the restaurant. Lots of moving parts. She managed money. She had to lead people in the restaurant, customers and the wait staff and the busboys in the kitchen.
But the difference being, so the comparison would be, now she's in property management, so she has to manage those tenants, but she has employees under her. So there's two facets to that, right? So, you know, that's...
And it's okay to get lucky once in a while, but would you bet on?
Yeah.
I've got lucky two or three times, but that's about it, right? I got only a few notches in my belt, right?
Yeah, when we had to hire 800 franchisees every year.
You need more systems, and yeah, I get it.
You screw up 4 months, you're dead.
Sure.
Like, you don't have 10 years, because 4 months later, they quit and go back to school, and you got to do it again.
Yep, so they need that track record. I think, fair enough.
Yeah, we became operationally world-class at recruiting and interviewing and hiring. So I take those skills now, and I systemize them in a simple way for every company to use.
Yeah.
And that's what I covered in my first book, Double Double, actually, in pretty good detail.
You write it down, Jake? Double Double? You know, it's funny that I'm so glad that I sucked at hiring employees in my other job in my restaurant, or else I'd still be there. You know what I mean? So that was the downfall. That was the bane of my existence there. I just didn't like the employees. And it was on me. It wasn't them. I just, you know, and it was always blaming them. And I was getting the wrong people in the wrong seats, and I'm glad because, you know, finally just got me to
hold
act
on,
and got me
into hold on, hold family. On, because this is so appropriate. We're getting so sidetracked, but this is going to be really good. Cameron, I'm going to let you hire our next employee. Did interviews all day, down to two people right now, right? I got one who has been on the sidelines for a minute. Her mother got sick, worked for a property management company, basically checked all the boxes, experience, etc. Right? She was an older lady, but she's been out of the game for a minute. But seemed to, I'm not doing like backflips, but seemed to be pretty good. The other one from Florida, she's younger. She's been in property management for 2 years, still checking all those boxes. They both seem to have really good attitudes, but you know, seems to have a little bit more in the customer, the Florida girl, the younger one, seems to have a little bit more of like the customer service, you know, attitude, and a little bit maybe more what you're looking for from the attitude perspective. But again, it's going to be coming up from Florida for the job, so there's a little bit of a transition there. Based on those two, is there anything, what would you say, which one would you pull the trigger on, or do you need more info?
You might need more info. I'm always worried about parachutes. I'm always worried about taking someone from one market into another and parachuting them in, because they don't have the support group and the friend network. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that friend and some social support is really critical for them. It can really hurt their ability to actually succeed in their role. So that's usually a bit of a strike against them.
The last lady that I was thinking of actually was coming from Kentucky, and I actually, that sort of made me a little nervous, because she was like, you know, was asking for an apartment unit and some other things. So interesting. Yeah. Playing the odds, right?
Yeah. So we found a lot of that. The next one is like, you just want to keep casting a wide net and keep look, like sometimes you use recruiting firms to help you or executive search firms. Sometimes you just go really, really aggressive on the marketing. Here's a tip that everyone can use as well. When you're hiring someone and you're posting a job ad, who writes the final copy of your job ad before you post it? Are you writing it? Hmm. Who's writing it?
The hiring manager.
Is the hiring manager a copywriter?
Not even close.
Are they a cop? Are they a marketer?
No.
This is a freaking advertisement for people.
Yeah.
Would you ever write an advertisement to sell a product? Like, would Apple ever just let Fred write?
So we do it all the time, and we're really bad at it. So guilty, and guilty some more. Man, now we're getting bent over and slapped right now, Gina.
We're really stupid, man. Holy. Let's shut this bad boy down, right?
I told you we needed marketing help.
You can't find good people because you got a shitty job ad that was written by Fred. Get Fred's job ad and pass it to a copywriter and have a copywriter make it pop off the page like sales copy. All of a sudden, you're recruiting.
Wow.
So, like, business is really simple.
What if we steal from the other guys?
So put some good honey out.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, what do you hate about business? Is there anything you dislike about business?
I don't like government, and I don't like the bureaucracy and the red tape and the pain in the ass factor. I don't like regulations. We don't need government to say you have to take care of people. I'll do that out of greed and profit alone. Like, I'll take care of my employees because I know my business will grow. I don't like that stuff. It's hard to invest in people, the younger version, the younger part of Gen Y. So the 20 to 30 year olds in the Gen Y is kind of 20 to 38 demographic. So the 20 to 30 year olds are tough right now because they job hop, and they job hop because we told them to. We're like, don't work for some company for 10 years. You're crazy. Go for 6 months, for a year, move. Like, so it's really hard to invest in those people knowing that they're probably going to leave.
Another check against the Florida girl.
What's that?
I said that's another check against the lady coming up from Florida.
Yeah, so it's really hard to hire those people knowing that they're probably going to hop. It's just a little bit of that. I'm really a big fan right now of using freelancers on a project by project basis because they have really strong experience and they're not going to complain that, you know, their boyfriend did something or my girlfriend didn't show up or my dog threw up this morning or I need vacation. Like, they don't do any of that. They know their project. They know what they're getting paid. They get it done, and they've done so much of it, and they're just as easy to hire as great employees are. So I'm a big fan of using freelance people.
Wow. So let me ask you, what was your most challenging turnaround out of all those companies, and what made it challenging?
Well, I've never done turnarounds. I build successful companies.
Successful.
Yeah, I don't work with crappy companies. Somebody said, why is every company you touch turned to gold? I said, I only touch gold. Like, I only take a good company and grow it. I don't take bad and turn it.
So which one was the hardest one to grow? I mean, and what challenges did you find from growing that company?
College Pro was the hardest one to grow because every year we had 100% turnover of our employees by design.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, right? College Pro was hard because 100% of our revenue was in 4 months, and then we went 8 months with no revenue. So cash flow, major cash flow crisis. Revenue, not. That was tough.
Yeah, and then if you get a really rainy summer or something, you know, being this with the seasonality of that, that could really suck.
One bad week was 5-6% of our year, right? Because one week was 6%. So that was tough. We built that company prior to the internet. Like, I left there in 93, so we didn't have email addresses. That was all fax machine and phone. So be able to build relationships and coach people and deploy teams and manage productivity had to be dumbed down systems, had to be very easy to execute systems. So I'd say that was harder. I think if business is easier than ever now with all the technology you can use, the problem is that people aren't focused. So they're finding it hard, but it's because they're not focused. Business is way easier than it's ever been.
So Cameron, what industries don't you like? Do you like, I know you don't like the government with Jake and I, but is there an industry you say, well, I'm just staying out of it? Like for us in commercial real estate, we just don't like strip malls. We don't like the retail space. We hate that because we see what's happening with big box. So we're staying out of it. Do you see any type of industry that you're saying, oh, I just don't like that?
Retail I won't touch because it's dying. They've either got to be moving online and that's what they want help with. And manufacturing, blue collar manufacturing isn't a big thing. I mean, I like, my criteria is they have to be young, fun, entrepreneurial, high viral, high growth, pre-public. That tends to be my zone. And by young, I mean kind of the young energy around business, like adoption of technology, adoption of apps, that working with teams, they get culture. You know, as well, it's my way or the highway. I've always done it this way.
So what have you seen as far as technology wise? Since 93, I mean, everyone picked up their phone. I mean, even if you had a recorder, you still pick the phone. What's the biggest thing you've seen technology do for businesses?
Leverage, for sure. Leverage that, you know, I'll give you an example. You can use something like Zapier or If This Then That. So, if an email comes in with a certain keyword, it notifies and it drops the attachments into Dropbox. And then that triggers an email off to the design firm. It also then automatically, the designers put it into WordPress, which triggers off automatically through Hootsuite and gets dropped on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter automatically. It gets, you know, like there's things that can happen automatically based on rules. That's really powerful, is that automation.
That's awesome.
So I try to look for anything that I do over and over again, and I just say, how can I automate it? And how can I outsource it? And then how can I delegate it?
We had another answer that I thought was great a couple weeks ago. We had a guy who's in his 60s doing multifamily, and he said back in the 90s he'd need 30 or 40 employees. Nowadays he needs 3 or 4 employees, and he's just like, and he's a guy who's embracing technology online. He's a fintech guy, so like that. That was awesome. It's really powerful. So
business is way simpler if you decide to stay ahead of the curve. But if the rate of change outside your business is greater than the rate of change inside your business, you're out of business. And it's these people that aren't investing in themselves. They aren't buying books for their teams. Like I wrote another book called Meetings Suck, and it's a book that every employee at every company should read. But if you're not willing to invest $12 in an employee's growth, you're out of business in a couple of years, because business is changing so much more rapidly than ever before.
I keep getting these things in my mind. I want to get to this book, but there's another question that I wanted to ask about your children. How do you teach your children about entrepreneurship? Other than living it and breathing it, what advice do you give to them?
Well, I try to show them that there's opportunities out there to have what they want. I try to show them that the reason I'm an entrepreneur is to control my time, so I can actually be home at lunch when they come home. I can take lots of I take 10 weeks vacation every year, so I can take a lot of paid time off. I can show them that I'm making money while I don't have to go to work. So trying to show them that, trying to show them that you can control and only work on the stuff that you like, you know, that there's power in that. Everything's going to be work, whether you're working for someone else or working for yourself. You have to work hard or work smart, but you're going to have to work. You may as well choose to do it yourself. Trying to teach them some of the basic lessons, you know, like right now, my older son who's 16 is looking all over the house to sell stuff on Craigslist. And he's constantly taking pictures of stuff that we don't use, listing it on Craigslist. Somebody's showing up at the door. I'm like, they just bought a chair. He just sold a chair. He's like, yeah, we haven't used it in 4 years. We've been in the storage room. I sold it. So that's like spotting an opportunity, right? And capitalizing on that opportunity. And he's learning how to market it and post it on Craigslist, learning how to negotiate with people. Just those things are good.
That's great. You wrote the book, The Miracle Morning.
Involved. I think parents are getting way too involved in their kids' business. Like if the kid's out running a lemonade stand, stay in the house. Let them sit outside by themselves. Let them learn how to sell. And then once in a while, say, how'd it go? What did they say to you? What did you say to them? But like, don't stand there hovering around them. Don't make their lemonade stand for them. Like the kid wants to make their own lemonade stand. They're not turning this into a franchise, for God's sake.
Not yet.
Well, like we way over involve, and then the kid loses the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I agree.
Helicopter parents.
It's brutal. Like I was telling someone the other day, you know, you need to let your kid fall off the monkey bars twice so that when they're on the house three floors up as a 40-year-old, they recognize danger. But if they haven't fallen a couple times, they're not going to realize that it hurts.
I agree with that.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. You wrote the book, Miracle Morning, wanting to get to that. What was the, I guess, the motivation for writing it?
Well, I wrote the Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs with Hal Elrod. Hal wrote the original Miracle Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Did the one that specifically tied for the entrepreneurial world. What spurred it was Hal and I are actually in a mastermind group together where we're both working on our skills, growing as leaders. He loved what I was doing in the coaching and masterminding world. I loved what he'd done with the community with the Miracle Morning. And we both recognize that, you know, there's certain habits that you can have in your day that set you off on the right foot. So how can we actually teach entrepreneurs those habits? So I've turned off all the notifications on my laptop, all of them on my phones, all of my watch, because I don't want to know unless I'm going to look for something. I don't need someone interrupting my path. I start my morning by waking up in the morning with a little bit of silence and just easing into the day. And then I do my daily affirmations, which is repeating key phrases that kind of build up my confidence. And then I read my vivid vision, and I'll read either my personal vivid vision or my business vivid vision. And then I'll do a little bit of exercise, as minimum as a 7-minute workout or going for a run or hopping on a rowing machine, doing yoga. Then I get into reading, trying to read either the Daily Stoic or some book that I'm reading for fun. And then I journal. And I've literally got them like sitting, you know, right beside me. Here's my journal from this morning. Here's my 5-minute journal where I did my gratitude. And I just kind of have that habit. And then I start off with a little bit of lemon juice and my vitamins and probiotics. And I have a smudge stick that I do this whole like ancient Indian smudge thing and kind of ease into the day.
Can I ask some question about the journal real quick? Because a lot of the other stuff that you brought up there, you know, is similar to things that I already do. A lot of people come on the show and they've talked about, you know, journaling and things like that. And I'm just trying to... I'm having a hard time figuring out how that fits in and sort of how it benefits the mindset. And if you could elaborate on that, it'd be great.
Yeah. So the journal is time to just let stuff flesh out. So this morning is an example. I didn't know what I was going to write about and I just started to write and then it kind of ended up somewhere. It started in this random place. And then it ended up with, so I really need to work at connecting at a heart level with my wife. She is my everything. And it didn't start there, but that's something that has stayed with me all day that I didn't know what I was going to journal about. I didn't know if it was going to be, like, it just starts to come out. So sometimes it's getting the negative feelings out. Sometimes it's getting positive feelings out. It's just kind of doing a little bit of a mind dump and stuff just comes out. And by doing that, it's allowing your own introspection to kick in as a human.
So you went in, you just like whatever pops, you just start writing. Is it any, and then through that, through the written word, maybe your subconscious came out and said, "Hey, got to focus on wifey here a little bit, right?"
Yeah, well, it wasn't focused on her. It was focused on it at a heart level. Like, how do I emotionally connect more? We're talking like I want to. So that was this morning's. You know, yesterday's could have been like, you know, spend more time with my kids or focus on my work again or get my daily habits kicked in. Like, I don't know what it's going to be, but journaling just one or two pages every day is really powerful. So I leave 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and my mentor, who is being groomed as the second in command at Starbucks, told me to journal every day for 20 minutes. So I grabbed a black notebook and I can show it to you. This is right here. But I literally every single day took this notebook and just started writing in it. And I made lists that I crossed out and I did, you know, mind maps that I went through and I did like mind maps like this. And I made lists of here it is. I did miscellaneous lists, lists about speaking, lists about consulting, lists about board roles, ideas around speaking, ideas for books, stuff that I did at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, key lessons I've learned in all my career, contacts I should meet with, resume ideas, like not that I ever used a resume, but I just did a mind dump of stuff. At the back of the book, it was dreams and nightmares, like dreams of stuff that I love doing and nightmares of stuff that I hate. And all of that journaling became my business. It literally ended up becoming, in fact, I've actually got stuff out of here is coming in my next book, The Vivid Vision, that comes out in January. My original mind map for my business today came out of me just journaling, just throwing ideas out.
It's interesting. Because a lot of the other stuff that you're bringing up, I still have a hard time in the mornings slowing down enough, because even though I'm getting up earlier, a lot of stuff starts coming through, but I need to be able to shut it down enough to be able to do that. And I haven't allowed myself to do that yet.
Well, so here's a couple things. Plug your phone in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Not in your bedroom. Yes. You don't need it. You know, if you want something beside your bed to read at night, you have a book there.
Yeah.
And you have an alarm clock that goes off, or you have like a watch, a Fitbit that'll wake you up in the morning. But then when you wake up in the morning, you can't look at your email anyway, because it's not there.
Yeah.
So beside your bed is your 5-minute journal and your book that you're reading for fun. And you get out of bed and you just ease into the day.
I got to make the commitment, Gino. It's time.
You know, I started finishing all my showers in the morning as a cold shower. Like, you literally finish for 30 seconds, as freezing cold as it can get. Man, it sucks in the wintertime, but it's really good.
So because we were having a conversation about Tony Robbins the other day, because I was telling Gino, man, when I get the hot showers on my head, like, I get these ideas. And a lot of times I get out of the shower and be like, man, what do you think about this, right? And I said to him, I don't want to lose that. So the flip side is, I know Tony Robbins is dunking himself in an ice pit every morning or whatever, and you're doing this. What's the benefit of the freezing shower?
Try it tomorrow once and you'll feel the benefit. It's like trying to explain to someone what making love feels like. Just go make love to somebody and then you'll know what it feels like. It will shock your entire system and you'll be like, whoa, I'm wide awake. And you won't lose any of the warm shower memories. I'm not saying have a whole cold shower. I'm saying the last 30 seconds.
So if I start, I get the warm ideas going. Then I say, all right, I know the 30 seconds of pain is coming, but it's going to be alertness and I'm ready to go.
It's like you're hopping around in there, man. You feel like a complete and utter dork. You wake up. But boy, oh boy, you get out and you are like wide awake.
The second espresso, here it comes.
Wow. You don't even need the first espresso when you do it. It's crazy.
Wow. So what do you tell somebody like about a miracle morning? But, you know, I'm not a morning person. I mean, how do you convince somebody to say, listen, shift your mindset and try it?
So I've even said it in the book. Sometimes my miracle morning starts by hugging the pillow. You know, sometimes I don't love getting up in the morning. I don't start my miracle morning at 5. I'll start at around 7. Mm-hmm. Actually have my assistant now won't book any calls for me until 8:30 in the morning so that I can actually ease into the day a little bit more. I used to book 7 a.m. calls. So you just start. A couple of weeks ago, I went and did a 5:30 in the morning hot yoga with a friend. And I'll tell you, 7 o'clock, I'm walking out of hot yoga and the whole world's starting to wake up. And I was like, damn, I really beat them. Like, it felt good.
That's great.
Some great exercise. And my family was just waking up. It was awesome.
That's great. So let me ask you, what are your 1, 3, and 5-year goals? I mean, you've done so many things. You've grown so much. It seems like you want to help people. What's the future hold for you?
On the business side or personal?
Both. Business. I think business and personal, you know, your lifestyle is dictated by your business. So it seems like they're so interwoven. It's part of your fabric. So, you know.
On the 3-year personal, I mean, my 2 boys are in grade 9 and grade 11. So for them, it's making sure I spend as much good quality time with them as possible, because in the next few years, they're gone. So I'm very cognizant of the age that I have with them now. So, you know, we're heading off skiing again next weekend. We're going skiing Christmas and New Year's, doing stuff with them in the afternoons. Like, just being very present with them is important. Lots of home-cooked meals. You know, with my wife and girls, same thing, just being very present, trying to be lighter around the house, less stressed, more fun, being more proactive in planning activities and planning vacations. We're going for a month together to Italy this summer. We're going to spend a month together in Florence. We've already booked our place there. So my wife and I are heading to Argentina at Christmas time together, just the two of us. So being very intentional on time and space and proactively doing stuff. On the business side, I'm really uber focused on building the COO Alliance. So I've got the only network of its kind in the world for the second in command. There's a million groups for entrepreneurs, but no one's out there teaching the COO how to actually grow the entrepreneur's company. So I've created a mastermind for that, and we're scaling that and opening up city forums all over US. We'll have 30 cities open by the end of 2020.
I got to be careful and not let my wife listen to this, because if she hears about all these vacations and time off and start, you know, really started to enjoy life, she might start coming after me. So we got to keep this under the rug for at least a couple more years.
That's the only reason we do this, is work is supposed to serve us, right? We're supposed to have control of our time and our money and our what we do. And that's why I do what I do. I don't want to wait until I get there to be successful. I want to do it every day. It also does something where it forces me to grow the business in the right way. The more time I take off, the more I end up delegating. The more time I take off, the more I can systemize and automate my cash flow. But the harder I work, I'm like a fly trying to get out a window. Like, that doesn't get you anywhere. Every one of those flies ends up dead.
So
yeah, but
so,
Cameron, that's the problem. There's a lot of people listening to the podcast that are flies and they're hitting into that window. I mean, how do we shift their mindset? I mean, it took me a little while to do it. I did it because I was just pissed off at my situation and I said, I have to change. I mean, is that what it takes people to do that? I mean, is that unfortunate, but is that what it takes? And yeah, if they have that consciousness to do that?
That's true from education back in grade school. The learner controls the environment. So until the student is ready to learn, they won't learn. So any listener that hasn't tripped and fallen, unfortunately, they're either going to have to trip and fall, or in their gut level, they go, you know what? I know this guy is right. Well, then fucking do it. Just do it. Mm-hmm. Like, just know at your gut level that it intuitively makes sense and do it. Like, if Tony Robbins is having cold plunge baths every morning, maybe it works.
No doubt. No doubt. The question I was going to ask is, I'm 35 years old. Since Wednesday of last week, and this was by choice, I've pretty much worked till 8 or 9 o'clock every night. But I'm having a really, I see you shaking your head. It's not every day. It comes and goes, but I'm having a blast and I can be a little bit of a deal junkie at time, right? You know, when the deals come, I want more and I want to do them. So I'm not doing stuff I hate. I'm truly enjoying myself, but there needs to be, cause you're talking like the family stuff, there needs to be a little bit better of a balance. What do you say to me?
So work is a drug.
Yeah.
It's no different than a drug or alcohol or sex or computers. It's an addiction and it feeds our dopamine need. So we're often avoiding pain or loneliness or something else to work. We're often avoiding issues with our spouse or issues with our kids or issues with ourselves. And we feed ourselves feel good because of the work. So we're feeding that. And what my suggestion is that you need to feed yourself in all the other areas as well. So you need to look at what am I avoiding and filling with work? The second part of that is you will never catch up. I'm going to work tonight to catch up. No, you'll just, because you're going to set more goals. Like, you're always going to set more goals.
Yeah, yeah.
The work, like, whatever you get done today, there'll be more goals, bigger goals. So what you're doing is building bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. So I never work. I'm done every day at 5. Like, as soon as I'm done the podcast, I'm done. I can show you my calendar.
Our business though, like when we're going through an acquisition, I think we don't have the proper systems to his point. Because when we go through an acquisition, it gets much busier, right? And then it goes back to normal and we can do that. I think the thing he just identified is that we're not properly systematized when we're taking over, because the work goes like this, right? And then it goes back down in levels. So that's probably, yeah.
If you made a choice and the choice was, I will not sacrifice, I will be home. Like, my dad built his own company.
Yeah.
But he was home every day at 5 o'clock for dinner.
Yeah.
He didn't work nights. He hung out with us on weekends. He was at our sporting events. He played golf every Wednesday afternoon. Like he called his office Wednesday at 12. They'd be like, he's at the doctor. He's always at the golf club Wednesday at 12. Like, so, but he made those his rocks. He made those his priorities and he fit other things around it.
Yeah.
And I think we have to build our business by design.
Fair enough.
I love that.
You can look at some of the biggest and most successful entrepreneurs in the world. It's like, why are they having so much fun and doing it? Because they're choosing it.
Yeah.
Like, they're choosing family. They're choosing relationships. They're choosing friendships.
Wow. I love that. Jake, you want to go with the short answer?
Yeah. Let's give a quick shout out back to our sponsor, CrowdStreet, who believes investors of all sizes should have access to quality commercial real estate investment opportunities. The CrowdStreet Marketplace features vetted commercial real estate investment offerings from over 100 sponsors from across the U.S. Download a free copy of their commercial real estate investing guide at crowdstreet.com/wheelbarrow. Now, the next question is a little bit repetitive, but I, you know, because you're the Miracle Morning guy, but what is your best habit for success? I ask everyone that comes on the show, what is your best habit for success? Because, you know, I think that a big part of Miracle Morning is about habits and changing your habits. Is there one that you can drill down and say, this one's the most important?
Yeah, and it's one of the chapters that I added to the Miracle Morning for entrepreneurs is around a vivid vision. So every entrepreneur has in their mind some idea of what they want their business to look like. the idea is to get that out of your mind and write it down so it becomes a 4-page or 5-page written document describing your company 3 years in the future in such vivid detail that everyone else can read your mind. And then imagine doing that for your personal life or for your family as well. Imagine if you and your spouse both crafted a vivid vision for the marriage and for the family 3 years from now, and you merged all your ideas together to a shared 4-page document, and then you tried to make every sentence come true. That's where the true kind of power of leveraging your vision comes in. So I covered that in Double Double. I covered it in The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, and I'm covering it in my next book that comes out in January called Vivid Vision.
So I don't want to sound naive, but why? Why is that the most important?
It's powerful because without it, everyone else is guessing. So in the home, I'll give you an example. When you build a house, if I was hiring a contractor to build my home, I wouldn't just hand him $1 million and say, I'll see you in 12 months. Build me a nice house. Build me a dream house. Build me a custom home. And he's like, what the? I need more. Mm-hmm. They need sketches and drawings and pictures. They need to understand how many kids I've got and how I entertain. They need a lot more ideas to make the plans. When they have enough ideas, they can make the plans. When they have the plans, they can get the workers to make the plans come true. In the business world, it's the same thing. If you have a bunch of employees and all you give them is a mission statement, they don't have enough ideas to what the company looks like and how it should operate and what the culture's like and what the meeting rhythms are like and how employees work together and what the media is saying about you. You see it all in your mind, but they can't see what you can see. So that's why you spend so much time holding them accountable and managing them and herding cats, is because they don't, and you don't have any better intuition than they do. The only reason your intuition is so strong is you see the movie. If they could see what you could see, they'd have the same level of intuition and decision-making as you have.
That's difficult though, because there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are scared and they don't want to put that vision down because they might fail. So they don't want to go out 3 to 4 years and say, wow, you know, and that's why I think a lot of people are failing, because they might see it, but they're like, I can't do that. You know, I want to get 500 people on a stage next year. I don't know if I can do that. I'm scared. I might not do that. So, you know,
what is it? If you think you're wrong or you think you're right, you are. If you're so worried about failing that you're not going to do what's working, then don't do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a reference for Elon Musk in his very first round of fundraising, because they wouldn't back Elon. They would only back his brother at College Pro Painters. Vision is really powerful stuff, but you have to share it. Focus is easy. Like, hiring good, smart people is easy. People can go and be the fly banging against the window all day. But that's why 85% of businesses fail in their first year, and then 85% of the ones that succeed fail in the next four. It's because people are working hard instead of working smart.
It seems to me, push the business aside or make it a part of the pie. What it seems like I'm hearing is you're actually talking about constructing or building a life for yourself. Business is a part of it. People talk about the 5 F's. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Friends, finance, family, and faith.
So it sounds like you're constructing a life for yourself and business is just a slice of the pie. Is that fair?
It is. It should be for everybody. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
None of this actually matters. We're just doing this to make money. So if I can make money at something I love and something that matters, that's cool. And if I can have good friends and good family and good health along the way, this is pretty good. This is a good gig.
But the key to this is that most people don't plan or prepare to build a life for themselves. They're not, you know, thinking about that, right? So you're saying, well, look, I plan to prepare for work, but I'm looking at it from this holistic perspective. This is my life and I want to succeed in all of these, you know, aspects. So
yeah, and that's what the best and most successful people have done. I just R&D. I just rip off and duplicate. I just do what the smartest and best people before me have done.
Yeah.
No one's going to hand it to us. Nobody's going to you don't work hard and get ahead. You work smart. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Like, all of those grandmotherisms are true. Right?
Shout out to the grandmas. Love me some grandma.
True.
Yeah. I like asking people also, what about a book recommendation?
Read One for Fun.
I haven't heard of that one. You know that one, Gino?
Read a Book for Fun.
Read a Book for Fun, bro.
Oh, just read a Book for Fun.
Any book.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now called, I think it's called The Paris Agreement, or the Paris Agreement. And it's around when the United States beat France for the very first time in the wine tastings. And it's all about wine and the history of California and wine and Napa. And it's just a story about the wine that happened. And it's fun. And I don't want to learn anything about business. I just want to disconnect. Like, read a book for fun.
I can't read, so it's out of the question for me. But
listen to a book on Audible.
That's, dude, I'm totally tuned into Audible. That's my thing, because I hate reading.
Just grab a book on Audible and listen to it. We're blessed with that. It's a great opportunity.
So, I'm going to admit this. I probably shouldn't say it. I've always read books to get something out of them, whether it's a business nugget or something like that. I don't know, maybe Atlas Shrugged, but I don't know that I've ever gone through a book that I've actually just enjoyed. I like Chris Voss's book, you know, but it's probably Atlas Shrugged is one of the only ones. But
yeah, Atlas Shrugged is great. I'll give you a book that you can enjoy that if you want to pull a business lesson or 10 from, you can. It was Steve Jobs' second favorite book of all time. It's my favorite of all time. It's called Endurance. It's by Ernest Shackleton, by Albert Lansing, and it's about Ernest Shackleton, the explorer who went to the Antarctic in 1917, and his ship crashed. And every person survived almost 2 full years living on ice floes and an island and traveling through 800 miles of ocean water in a 4-man lifeboat, like a crazy true story about exploration that will literally grab you. It's a spectacular book.
Very cool. Check it out.
Wow.
Last question for you, Cameron. What project are you excited about right now?
We're doing some renovations on our home that I'm looking forward to having done, and our home in Scottsdale. I'm excited about the CEO Alliance. I'm literally building something that really matters, that's huge, that is absolutely necessary. Where all these second-in-commands kept going to conferences for entrepreneurs, and they know they didn't feel like they fit in, and now they feel like the cool kid.
I like that.
Implementers. What is the best way for listeners to get a hold of you, learn more about the CEO Alliance, and check out some of your books?
Sure. So the COO Alliance is thecooalliance.com. And then my main website is cameronherold.com. It's H-E-R-O-L-D. And then all four of my books, Double Double, Meetings Suck, which they should get for every employee, The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, and then Vivid Vision. All four of them are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes.
Cameron, this has been very educational for me. From a guy that's in the grind right now, growing businesses, speaking to you since you've been there, you have the sort of after the business has grown and I've sold it vision, I took away a lot. So thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Cameron.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.